You're listening to a podcast by Pastor Fred Thompson at Mount Gilead Baptist Church.
Well, last week we started a two-part series with the question is this: how do I make wise decisions, especially in tough times? And we're going to be looking in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, so if you've got your Bible, go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. If you remember last week, if you happen to be here, I mentioned that one pastor whom I had read some things by titled his sermon on this section as Coffee with Granddad. And he said what it was like was that all through the first five, six chapters of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is giving all this advice about where he's not finding meaning in life. And then when he hits chapter 7, it's sort of like he gets a cup of coffee and he pulls up beside you and he says, but let me give you some things about how you can make some wise decisions in your life. Even though I haven't found meaning in life through all these things, wealth and power and everything else, but let me just give you some things that'll help you make some wise decisions. Well, it's sort of like the bank president. It's like Solomon is pulling up here and he's saying, listen, I've done all these things and they didn't work. I've gotten experience of this thing now, so how can you keep from making some bad decisions in your life, especially when times are tough? And why is it especially when times are tough? It's because when times are tough, we want to make the fastest decision possible. We want to get out of that situation. And so when it comes to making wise decisions, sometimes we may be guilty of taking shortcuts. And what Solomon is saying here is, listen, don't take any shortcuts in your wise decisions. We're going to review just a little bit. We're going to go through here, and we're going to look at just briefly the points that we looked at last week. In verses 1 through 6, one of the first things that we saw was this: choose things that build character and not just popularity. When things are tough, don't do things that just gain acceptance with other people, but think about, how does this affect my character? This is probably one of the most important pieces of advice that Solomon gives in these all these verses. And what he's saying is this: who I really am is a whole lot more important than who people think I am. Don't just do stuff for what people think. Do things that change what's inside. Here's the way I reworded this: who cares if you smell good if your character stinks? That's the truth. You know, and what we need to do when we're making decisions is choose things that build character. Secondly, choose what fulfills God's purpose and not just what feels good. Choose what fulfills God's purpose and not just what fulfills good. Look at what God has called you to do in life. Look at what God's purpose is and choose to fulfill those, not just something that gives you a momentary piece of excitement or something in your life. A third thing was this: choose things that are eternal and not just temporary and entertainment. Look for the eternal. Don't just look for temporary fixes. Don't look for just something that feels good. Don't look for something that simply entertains you for the moment, but look ahead at what's eternal when you make your decision. Take time to be quiet and reflect. Take time to just think about what you're going through. Think about what's going on. Reflect on it. Then make your decision. And it sort of flows into this next one: view times of trouble as opportunities for deep reflection. Take that time to really think about what that adversity means in your life. Take that time to really evaluate what's going on. There's a song, and if our technology will work with us this morning, it's done by a young lady named Laura Story. The title of that song is Blessings. Now, you may or may not heard the song. It's a fairly recent song. But if it'll play for us here this morning, I see the first scene up here, so this is good. You may not be able to read all the words, but I want you just listen to this and the perspective it gives you on adversity and things that happen in your life.
Due to copyright restrictions, we have not recorded Laura Story's song for this podcast. Please go to the internet or to her CD to hear Laura Story sing the song Blessings.
What if the trials of life are really God's mercy in disguise? I think that's what Solomon is saying in these two things. What he's saying is this: take time to reflect, and in times of adversity, reflect deeply. What we may appear to us to be difficulties in life may actually be God's way of bringing mercies and blessings to our life. He then goes on to say in that next section there, the next verse, verses 5 and 6, seek advice from wise believers, even if it hurts. Look for people who can be advisors to you, and let them advise you. And sometimes what they're going to share with you is going to hurt, but just listen to it. It's better to listen to wise believers than to listen to people who are foolish. Because people who are foolish are going to give you advice that's not going to last. It'll be temporary and it won't be productive. Listen to those whom you can trust. Then part two we're going to look at today. We're going to begin in verse 7. We're going to look at some more proverbs that Solomon shares about making wise decisions. Look in verse 7 at the very first one. Surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. That word oppression is translated differently in different translations. Some have the word adversities and some have different things there, but the actual Hebrew word there is a word which simply means weight. And what he's painting a picture here is this, that there are times in life when there are these overwhelming weights that happen. There are oppressions, there are adversities that happen. Now, in the picture that Solomon's talking about, he may actually be thinking towards there are times when you are a good person and you are trying to seek wise decisions, but the political system and the rulers are oppressing you. And he says in that the second part of that verse is this, that it's better than giving a bribe, and a bribe corrupts the heart. So the picture may be that, you know, you're so oppressed by those who are over you that you may be tempted to go give them a bribe. Well, it can actually go further than that. There's a principle even deeper than just maybe that picture that Solomon is talking about there. And the picture is this. There are times in life when you are so overwhelmed that things are going on that you are tempted to do something wrong just to get relief. Which is the point. When overwhelmed, don't do something wrong just to get relief. You know what? There's a modern proverb on that, and that modern proverb is this: two wrongs don't make a right. You've heard that one before. And there's such a temptation in our world today to do that. There's such a temptation that we are told you need to have instant gratification. We're told you need to have instant relief. I mean, we mentioned this last week. Every headache advertisement is that we relieve a headache faster than the other guy. We want to get rid of it quickly, and we can be very tempted sometimes to make wrong decisions. If you're working for a corporation and suddenly find yourself in a situation where maybe you're in financial trouble and you have some access to funds, maybe the temptation's there just to take a few of those to help you through the tough time. Maybe there are times in your life when there are relationships that you may just decide it's okay in this relationship just as long as it helps me get by. It doesn't matter how I use people. Listen, two wrongs never make a right. And here's one of the reasons why. He says in the last part of that verse 7, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Now, in our Western thinking, we think of the heart being this thing in our chest that we get cardio exams for frequently. And if you are inheriting that from your family, you may find problems with your heart along the way, and you've got to have open heart surgery or other things. That's our Western thought. But in the Hebrew thought, the heart was the point of the life, or the place in life that all of life flowed out of. It was that place where life came from. As a matter of fact, Proverbs, Solomon wrote about this, Proverbs 4:23. Many of you may be very familiar with that proverb. I have it highlighted in my Bible. Keep your heart with all vigilance. What does he say there? Keep your heart with all vigilance. Establish homeland security if you need to. Guard your heart. I mean, go to extra lengths to guard your heart. Why? For from it flow the springs of life. Some translations say, for it is the wellspring of life. What happens is this. When we choose in our lives to do things that are wrong simply to get relief, it doesn't give us relief. It actually burdens your heart. And what you find yourself is this. The thing from which your life flows, your lifeblood, your wellspring, becomes clogged and choked off. And it corrupts it. And so the very first thing Solomon tells us is this, is, hey, listen, when you're overwhelmed, Don't go do something wrong just because it brings you relief. Still take time to make the right decision, because if you do the wrong thing, it's just going to choke your life off and you'll have to live with it. The next three verses sort of lump together, verses 8 through 10, and they say this: better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the bosom of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Here's the principle underlying those three verses. Live your life keeping the end goal in sight. Live your life keeping the end goal in sight. Now, I might could have abbreviated that just as live life with the end in sight, but I felt like that sort of missed the point. Because what he's saying is live your life with the end goal in sight. Do you know what? Every one of us in here have a goal in mind. We may not think far enough. For the most part, we in here are short-sighted. I'm guilty of that. We all are. We're guilty. Our end goal is often very temporary. If I could only graduate from high school, if I could only get through college, if I could only meet someone and get married, if we could just have children, if we could just get rid of our children, if I could make it to retirement and live comfortably in retirement, if I could go back to work and make some money and have health insurance to pay for my health right now. Do you get it? We're very short-sighted. Our goals are so simple. Our goals are so short-sighted. What about the goal of this? Well done, good and faithful servant. What about last week we talked about? Jesus said in his high priestly prayer there in John chapter 17, Father, I've glorified you. I have completed what you sent me to do. What if that's our goal in life? Help us complete what you've sent us to do. You know, our goals are so often things like health and power and entertainment. But our goals need to be further out than that. That's the end in sight. We don't think beyond the day that they come and get us and take us to the funeral home. Almost all of our goals deal totally with this life. But what about the next life? What Solomon is saying in those verses is this: better the end of a thing than its beginning. And the reason for that is that when you're in the beginning of something, everything is out there. It's all future. You have no idea what's going to happen. However, once you get to the end of something, you know what all has happened. You know how you can react from it. And there's a purpose and there's a completion in sight there. He's actually saying in these next few verses that there are some things that we can avoid in our life if we keep the end in sight. One of the first things he says is this: we can avoid developing an impatient spirit or a prideful spirit. He says, better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. We can avoid becoming impatient, or we can avoid becoming proud if we keep the end goal in sight. All of you here that have had children, you will understand this little illustration. It's true of all children. It's not just true of mine or yours. So I'm going to do this in the generic because you're going to recognize it. Sometimes your children want to do something. And they are so excited about it, they keep asking you, let's go do this, let's go do this. I'll make it a little bit this personal. They come to Daddy and they say, Daddy, I want to do this. So you look at them and you say, okay, we can do that, but listen carefully. If you want to go do that, then there are some things I have to do to be available to do those with you. Okay. So what you need to do is let me complete these things, then we can go do your things. Okay, Daddy, okay. And all while you're trying to complete what you've told them that you need to do, they keep coming and saying, are you ready yet, Daddy? Is it time to go? Oh, by the way, Daddy, can you come do this for me? You know why? Their goal is just to go. They're ready to go. Your goal is to complete this task and then go. See, in life, we're just like children. We don't like to admit that. You know, God calls us sheep. Sheep are not very intelligent creatures. They require somebody to lead them all the time. Well, in truth, we're also like children when it comes to God. But we're the same way. We want something in life, but our goal is so short-sighted. God's goal is this: I want to develop in you the character of Jesus Christ to become more like Him. And we're constantly saying, God, can we take care of this? Can we take care of this? Can we take care of this? We forget, and we become impatient. Or on the flip side, sometimes there are things in our lives that we accomplish, and we stick our fingers in our lapels and we say, hey, wow, look what I did. And all the time God said, Hey, you've been living with the end in life, and guess who's been working in your life to help you get to this place? So he says, if you keep the end in sight, if you keep the goal in sight, to stand before God and hear Him say, well done, good and faithful servant, you can keep from becoming impatient, or you can keep from becoming prideful. He also says you can keep from being angry over stuff you can't control. How many of you love being sitting in rush hour traffic? Or you're trying to make yourself to get to a meeting really fast, and you're on your way to the meeting, and you get caught by every signal on the way. By the way, they install a special thing on my car when I buy it, and it changes all the signals to red just before I get there. It's impatient. You sit there, and you're in a hurry. You know, you want to switch lanes of traffic, and you're trying to get there, and you know what? You start getting angry. Can I ask you a question? Can you control the lights that are holding you back? No. The Bible doesn't say it's wrong to get angry, but it does say that it's wrong to get angry about the wrong things. And so we have to be careful in our lives. And if we keep the end goal in sight, it'll help us becoming frustrated, because usually our anger comes out of that impatience. It comes out of that part of us that wants to just, let's get this thing done, and we start getting angry and frustrated over it. Actually, impatience and pride and even this being angry over things, some people describe this as a form of unbelief. That we don't really believe God can take care of everything, so we become impatient. We don't really believe God's in control of everything, so we start getting angry about it. We really don't believe that God will take care of us, so we begin to get upset and frustrated. Well, he even says that there's a third thing. Verse 16 goes on to say, say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Living with the attitude of wishing for the good old days. Living with the attitude of wishing for the good old days. It's been said that the good old days are the combination of a bad memory and a good imagination. I liked that when I read it. That's why I put it in there. You know, I think that some of the success of some of the things on the internet today, you know, for y'all that do the internet, you realize that there's Facebook and Twitter. There's a website called Classmates, where you can go back and you can find all your old classmates. You know what? There's two sides of the success. One side of the success is that is the social networking for a lot of people. That's how they communicate with people. They don't see people in person. They pick up their cell phones and they don't call them in person. They send them a text message. That's just the way of some of our society when it comes to communicating with each other. But there's a flip side to the success of those, and I think it's the wishing for the good old days. I think that a lot of people go on that as they want to connect with people that they knew from their past, from their teenage years or their college years, and they want to connect with them again because it's like, maybe I can bring back some of those good old feelings that we used to have. Kierkegaard, and I will never pronounce his name correctly, says it this way: life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. In other words, we can't keep wishing for the good old days. We can take the good old days and use those to understand what's going on in life, but if we're going to live life, we've got to live it from today and forward. You can't go back. Let me give you an example. And I'm going to do this as sort of all three of these linked together in some ways, keeping the end in sight. When people get married, they get married for a lot of different reasons. Some people get married for companionship. Some people get married for the physical relationship that can be a part of it. Some people get married just because they're alone. You could go through a list of reasons. I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with those goals, but I'm going to say this, that's not the end goal. When you get to Ephesians, and you start reading in Ephesians some verses about the relationship between wives and husbands, and it goes through all this thing about wives being submissive and husbands loving their wives as Christ loves the church, and it's going on all about the relationship, and suddenly you get to verse 32, and right in the middle, verse 32 says this, "This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church." Do you know what the end goal of marriage for God was about? It was about giving a demonstration to the world what the relationship between us and Him should be. Wow. That adds a whole new perspective to marriage, doesn't it? And we look at that and we get impatient and we get angry in our relationships, in our marriages, because oftentimes it's because our immediate goals are not being met. And we forget about that ultimate goal. Let me demonstrate how that happens in wishing for the good old days. I was reading about someone who was counseling, and he said he counseled a lot of people in his life. And he said, what's happened is I've noticed as I've counseled people in my life that as I counsel people who are married, they wish they were single. And as I counsel people who are single, they wish they were married. And he says some of them are the same people. Those they counsel ahead of time want to be married so bad they don't know what to do. And then they get married and they come back and say, you know, I really wish I was single again. It's a trap that we can fall into, wishing for the good old days. Here's something that I hope that will help you on this one. Today will be tomorrow's good old day. You want me to say that one again? Today will be tomorrow's good old day. I'm going to tell you something. There'll never be another day like today. It won't happen again. I can try everything I want in my life to bring it back to today, but it won't. God says, I've placed you today, and what is in today is sufficient for you. Yes, look back and use the past to help you learn and make decisions and other things. But look, I've made you for today, and you can't change it. The world is changing around us. I mentioned to someone this morning that my girls, I have discussion, not deep discussions, mind you, but I have to say things to them, discussion-wise, about things that I did not have to deal with till I was an adult because of the way our world is. I don't want to deal with those things. And I find myself sometimes wishing for the good old days so I don't have to deal with those things. But you know what? I can't not bring back the good old days. I have to live in today. Today will be tomorrow's good old day. As a matter of fact, Solomon even says that if you live with that question, why were the former days better than these, you're not doing it out of wisdom. You're doing it doubting the goodness of God and bringing you to today and providing you with the things today that are here. You make do for today what today is. That's a part of what Solomon is saying in Ecclesiastes. Then you have verses 11 through 14, and it says this, wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage to those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. Here's what he's simply saying in those verses. Don't forget the value of wisdom and of making wise decisions. You know, he says that wisdom won't give you the purpose of your life. And we'll see that before we're ended with Ecclesiastes. But he's still saying that wisdom's valuable, and you need to hang on to it. Back in Proverbs, he wrote about wisdom. And in chapter 3, verses 13 through 15, he says this, "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold." In other words, if you get wisdom, it's better than being wealthy. If you get wisdom, it's better than having money. "She is more precious than jewels," and underlined this phrase, "and nothing you desire can compare with her." There is not one thing in life that you desire that can be better than gaining wisdom from God. It's something that will help you throughout your life. It'll help you make the decisions you need to make. I really appreciate Charles Swindoll, or Chuck Swindoll, as you may know him. He says this, "And wisdom offers two major benefits." And I took this straight from him. I did modify a few things on the second one, but the very first one here, I took straight out of his. This is from him. I take no credit for this. "Wisdom preserves our lives from human pitfalls." That's one of the things that wisdom does. If we look to God and we seek wisdom and God's wisdom, it'll preserve our lives from human pitfalls. What are some human pitfalls? Well, here are some. With an inheritance comes the pitfall of pride. You know, there are people out there, and you've seen them, they didn't earn a penny that they have. Everything they got, they inherited from some wealthy parent or wealthy grandparent. I remember talking to a friend who had moved up to Nashville, and he for a while was working in a restaurant as a waiter, and he said this lady would come in every day and he would wait on her, and she would always leave this big tip. And he got to talking with her one day, and he found out, he asked, what do you do? Well, she didn't do anything. And as he began to talk with her, what he found out is this: I believe she was the granddaughter of someone who had written a song back in the 20s that was one of the most popular songs ever, and she lived totally off the royalties of the inheritance. Now, in this case, she was a humble person, but all you got to do is pick up the entertainment news and you'll discover that that's not true for a lot of people who inherit their money and they didn't have to do anything for it. They become prideful. Wisdom preserves you from doing that. It also, with affliction comes the pitfall of doubt and disillusionment. You know, when affliction comes to our life, we can begin to doubt God's goodness. We can get disillusioned with God. But wisdom can help prevent us from doing that. With the anticipation of relief, vindication, and even rewards for doing what is right comes the pitfall of resentment and bitterness. You know, what can happen is this. When we're going through adversity in our life, we're struggling with adversity in our life, we see the end in sight, or maybe relief has already come, and here's the question that starts to surface in our hearts and our minds: God, what took so long? And if we're not really careful, we'll start getting bitter and we'll start getting angry toward God. Wisdom can help us and preserve us from doing that. Why? Number two, wisdom provides our lives with divine perspective. Wisdom helps us see things through God's eyes. And when we begin to see things through God's eyes, listen, if you're going through adversity, it doesn't take away the hurt. Doesn't take away the grief. It doesn't take away the pain. But when you're going through adversity in your life and you begin to look at it from God's perspective, it helps you recognize His presence while you're going through it. He promised us in Hebrews, "I'll never leave you nor forsake you." And God's right there with us. Listen, God is in control, and what He has bent cannot be straightened. There are things that come into our life that God has done, and if God has done it, we can't change it. And here's the perspective that gives us: God's sovereignty. God is in control. And we shouldn't forget that. A second thing is this: when God grants prosperity, we should be joyful, enjoy it, and not feel guilty. I had a friend that he was always guilty for the good things that happened to him in life. He was a Christian, But for some reason, he always felt it was wrong to have good things happen in his life. Listen, there's nothing wrong with having good things happen in your life. There's nothing wrong when God brings you prosperity. God even says, enjoy it. Be happy that you've gotten prosperity. But here it is. We must not use it to be independent from God, because we have it because of his mercy and grace, or his grace and mercy, which is the perspective, God's grace and mercy. Everything good in our life we have because of God's grace and God's mercy. And then the last one is this, in times of adversity. That's just the flip side. In times of adversity, guess what? God is still in control. He hasn't given up his control, and he'll use it to strengthen our faith and trust in him. And the perspective we gain during that time is this, God's faithfulness. It's God's faithfulness. We can see when we are looking from divine perspective, we begin to see God's sovereignty. We begin to see his grace and mercy. We begin to see his faithfulness, and we won't find it any other way. You know what? You and I may not know all the answers to life. We may not have any idea what's going to happen next. As a matter of fact, to me, that is exactly what that last part of verse 14 is saying. It says this, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. I can't tell you what tomorrow brings, but I do know the one who will bring tomorrow. That's what wisdom is all about. We may not know and have the right answers. We may not have the wisdom, but we know the one who has the wisdom. As a matter of fact, I was reading in a devotion just yesterday. And in the devotion, it was talking about Christ. And you and I know that we need Christ in our life to live. That we know that life without him would be a hopeless case. But in 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, it says this, consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Oh, wow, that hurts. He says that you, brothers, when it comes to worldly wisdom, you just don't really got it, do you? You know, you're not really wise. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. He's telling the Corinthians, hey, you guys weren't powerful. You didn't come from rich families. You don't got nothing. You're not even very smart. He goes on to say this, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. Now listen to this. And because of him, you are in Christ Jesus. When you've trusted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, and you are in Christ Jesus, here it comes, who became to us wisdom from God. Jesus Christ became wisdom. When he's in us and we're living for him and he's the vine and we're just the branches, guess what? He is wisdom in our life. He says he's also the righteousness. You and I can't be made right ourselves. We need him to make us right. So Christ is our righteousness and our sanctification. You want to be more like Christ? He's the one that helps you be more like Christ. He's our sanctification and our redemption. We can't be redeemed without Jesus Christ. He is the one that redeems us. So that as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. It's Jesus Christ who makes all the difference in our world. He's the one that makes all the difference in making the wise decisions. You want to know how to make wise decisions? James says it this way, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. Now, I read through the paraphrase, the message. Many of you are familiar with it. And in the message, this is how that verse reads. If you don't know what you're doing, raise your hand. Pray to the Father. And listen to this. He loves to help. You'll get his help and won't be condescended to when you ask for it. You want to know how to make wise decisions? One, have a relationship with Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. He becomes the wisdom in your life. Ask God for wisdom. He's not going to say, I cannot believe you asked me that. He's not going to condescend you. He's not going to put you down because you ask him the question. You go to him and say, God, I don't know what to do. And he says he loves to help you. He loves you to help you make wise decisions. And Solomon's Proverbs are some of the guidelines he gives us to help us make those wise decisions.
Thank you for tuning in. If you're ever in the Griffin area, we would love to have you come visit us at 10:45 on Sunday mornings. Our location is 14550 Highway 19 South in Griffin, Georgia. I hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, God loves you.